Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Another Monday evening, and what a Monday evening, and Edwin is back for another rant. Edwin, it's all going a bit weird, isn't it?
Look, all I can say, Martin, is I hope you've got a couple of kilos of popcorn and get the old pot out and start popping away. Or knowing you, Martin, you probably have a popcorn machine attached to all your cables there at in your studio.
Yes, Edwin, pick up the popcorn, hold on to it. We are in for a really, really interesting ride. And I want to take people back to 2007. I remember I was actually running a media conference with the guys from JP Morgan in Sydney on the day that the market dropped considerably. And I remember saying at that time, with regards to the global financial crisis, the short-term impact is quite visible, and we'll see where it goes. But the long-term impact is the critical question to ask. And I think we should be saying precisely the same today, because hold your hat, eat the popcorn, watch the popcorn. Things have really fundamentally changed in the last few days. And, there were early signs it would. I think, though, we're going to have to be really careful about trying to read into what's going to happen because there are so many uncertainties at the moment. So eat the popcorn, just watch and wait.
Look, as you said, Martin, and you've hit the nail on the head there, there is a lot of uncertainty. And I think it's three-dimensional chess from that Trump is playing. So it's one of those things. Economies, governments, are they going to hold on to myths, to what would you call it? To ideologies, to the question is, what are they going to hold on to? Personal ideals, or are they going to look for the betterment of the nation? Or putting everything aside, Martin, one thing we know fundamentally, and this is what's been propagated, what's been said, what's been reported, what Trump himself and others in his cabinet have said, and that is, look, they're looking after their own people. It's now the play or the ball is on our court or on our politicians' court, and let's see what they do, where they take us, where they lead us. Because you and I know, Martin, that from 2020, the beginning of 2020, the rules changed. The rules changed, and now this is a reset. It's going to shake a lot of people up. It's definitely going to have an impact on housing, which we're going to talk about different points that have already come to light, and many have been preparing for one way or another. But again, as you said, it's early days, and it's more likely going to be 3 to 6 months before the dust really settles.
Yes, and my initial observation with regard to our politicians, which are frankly, they're as weak as gnat's water generally. But it seems to me that the current political campaign is just completely off key with regard to where real households are and more broadly the impacts that we're seeing coming through. Just to reflect on a few things, Edwin, if you look here, this was the Sydney Morning Herald front page, the madhouse, with Trump there with his card. And I think people are not understanding. Trump was very clear at the time of the election that he was putting America first, and he's always been a tariff man. So there should be no surprise here. The only surprise that I'm seeing is that markets were basically assuming that he'd do a bit, but he'd reverse it quickly because the markets would go down. Markets have now been shocked by the fact that they are dropping. And he's still standing firm and he's saying, no, we're going to hold the line. And I think that's very important to understand. The other point here is that if you look at some of these comments, I think this is quite interesting. And as Cookie says, Those who think Trump is insane with his tariff strategy isn't understanding why. It's very deliberate and controlled to bring down rates and bond yields. Why? Because they've got to refinance trillions of debt very soon. They want it to be at 2%, not 4%. Christopher Joy says, an inconvenient truth, this is quoting Goldman, the forward PE, the price earnings multiples on the S&P is 18, which still ranks in the 81st percentile of a 25-year data set. The market bottomed around 14 in 2018, 13 in 2020, and 15 in 2022. And as Matthew made the point, the Aussie dollar has just dropped to 60 cents. So we're importing inflation. Why? Because our career politicians who don't understand the way the world works have devalued our currency and the nation. We can do better. We must do better. I think that's right. But then if you go back to the US, right, this is fascinating. Okay. They've done mass tariffs three times in American history, 1829, 1930, and now 2025. Actually spaced by about 100 years, because everyone who remembers the last one needs to be dead for the next one to happen. The last two caused depressions. This one will make us totally rich, though. And as I showed, I think last week, you know, if you go back to the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, back in the 1930s, that had a significant and profound impact on the economy. And of course, we had the 2029 problems, and then we had the depression through the 30s. And, you know, just to go that bit further, this is Mickey Mouse calculations. AI could have done better. Maybe they used AI, Edwin, to actually calculate the to calculate these figures, because I think everybody assumed that there was mass science in this calculation that he used. But look, there's very little science to it, and it's very, very concerning. So, you know, you've got to say we are in a new place now. But as we will move on to very shortly and talk about property, it does raise the question then as how property is going to play into this, right? From the point of view of people overseas looking at Australian property thinking, gee, that's cheap, right? People thinking in Australia, well, maybe property is more secure. And of course, as we'll see shortly, the RBA will probably cut interest rates. So, you know, a lot of loose cannon fodder firing around at the moment.
Yeah, look, the thing is, Martin, with, you know, to be honest and to be, you know, I stopped looking at historical events, as I said, and giving it too much weight. Since 2020, I don't give it as much importance as one would expect if we were traveling through or chartering through a normal course of events, economic events, global economic events, and the like. Because what's really happened over the last four or five years is the those that are truly in control have reared their head, and it's and many don't like it, and this is this is what's happening. That's the biggest fight that's happening over in America. But outside of my philosophical views or otherwise, let's look at the fundamental principles of what Trump is doing. As Cookie Boy says, that he's it's three dimensional chess, and they had to do it because, as Elon himself has been saying over and over again, and that is that America was headed down the precipice because the debt of $9 trillion matures, in 2025, and quite frankly, they had nowhere to come up with it other than print more money and send the country into a real depression. But look, going back to obviously what the rent is about, and this is property, and what's happening, and if you want to do a comparison between America and Australia, America has got a lot of resources. America's got a lot of machinery. America's got a lot of startup and get up and go, and they've got a lot of local tradespeople that can build. They've got a lot of engineers. They've got a lot of they've got a lot of resources behind them. We don't. We sold our bloody resources. We sold the rights to our resources, to our natural resources. We gave up our manufacturing plants. We gave up our rights to to be able to build cheaply, effectively, cheaply, and basically we've invited the world to bring to bring to us what we were doing so happily 15, 20 years ago, to an extent. Unfortunately, we've sold our souls, Martin. We've sold our souls, and this is why moving forward, these tariffs are really going to be painful for us by way of, it's going to be costlier to build. We got rid of our construction manufacturing, as we've said, shared in the podcast from last year, when major what were publicly listed companies that we relied that the building industry relied on went private again. But the people that bought them were offshore investors that now own them. They've got the rights to the name, and we're just going to get cheap material. Not cheap by way of it's going to cost us less, but in terms of quality, lesser quality materials from abroad. But we're still going to be paying through the nose in order to import them and to build. So construction is only going to get more expensive. Small to medium sized SMEs are going to continue to go broke because our politicians have got their head in the sand, and they're more concerned with net zero and 2030 and every other jolly thing that lines their pockets, as opposed to really looking after the well-being of the Aussie battlers and the Aussies in general. Whether you're a battler, whether you've got it made, the people aren't really being looked after. So there's a lot more building companies that are in trouble and will continue to get into trouble. And yes, from the demand side of things, you've got an Aussie dollar that's up to, I think it's at 60 cents or and pushing about to break the 60 cent barrier. And guess what? That just means that others, as you said earlier on, Martin, from abroad are saying, yeah, property starts to look very cheap when they can get two for the price of one, basically. Then you've got the local demand as well. So the stock market, which is again those that play the stock market, you could say, the people that have got a lot of money. I'm sure the majority of the Australian population don't play the stock market. And those that are crying are the ones that have basically invested everything into the stock market, and they're the ones that are making the most noise at the moment, right? But the majority are still renting, and the majority still don't own a principal place of residence, let alone an investment property. So from that point of view, it's going to get even worse because those that can draw out and those that are willing are going to basically change the asset class from stocks and shares into bricks and mortar. So that's what's going to happen. I mean, from our point of view, from our client's point of view, this is just a one sample or a sample of one of our clients. She's a CIO of a tech company. She spends half her time here in Australia and half her time in Canada. And this is what she has to say. Basically, this morning she wrote to Dusty and said, "What a mess in the financial markets. I'm glad to have mostly invested in real estate and moved out of stocks in this moment. And plus, you can live in it." And this is what people are looking for moving forward. They're looking for somewhere to live in now. They're starting to think, hold on a minute, if the stock market's wobbly, what about crypto? What about Bitcoin and all these others? I mean, yeah, you can buy gold and you can make money, but sooner than later, you have to transfer that that wealth. And particularly if you're renting, sooner than later, people are going to be saying, "Hold on a minute, we better start putting a roof over our heads." Now, when this client of ours, when she talks about we've invested in real estate. When she says she invests in real estate, she's got a principal place of residence with a partner over in Canada, and they've got a principal place of residence here in in Australia to live in. They don't rent it out. They it's basically it saves them on on when they live here, they have their own place to stay in. So this is the thing that's going to put more pressure on our markets, I feel. And it's and if David Taylor, as he points out, if the ANZ are already talking about, or the markets are talking about a 0.5 or a 50 point drop in the from the ABA, a cut. Well, what's that going to mean, Martin, with housing demand and supply?
Well, I think as David says there, it depends on what happens to unemployment, right? Because clearly there are multiple dimensions around this, which is worth thinking about. And it is fascinating to me how pretty much all the analysts are now saying, oh, the RBA has got to cut, the RBA has got to cut. RBA response is going to be cut, cut, and more cuts. Uncertainty could have a chilling effect on business investment and household spending decisions. I think uncertainty is a very important thing to understand as well. And there are different points of view, I guess, as to what may happen ahead with regards to the interest rate situation. Remember, of course, that many people may not have direct share exposure, although some do, but many will have a superannuation fund, and that superannuation fund is now looking considerably less rosy than it was last week. Now, of course, not all superannuation money is actually very much plugged into the Australian share market, but a lot of it's actually plugged in overseas markets, and there are other asset categories there too. So there is a lot to try and unpick here. And I guess my perspective has been two things. The first is we should recognize that this is actually the end of globalization. It was always a bit looking a bit iffy, and globalization never benefited most people anyway. It benefited the rich, it benefited large corporations, it allowed them to essentially make things way cheaper than previously by effectively offshoring it and bringing it then into the local country and then charging a huge margin on that. And I think that's worth just reflecting. There was a very, very interesting little article here looking at the iPhone and how the tariffs would affect an iPhone. And this is a really good example showing that currently, the price would be considerably higher if you're actually making an iPhone post-tariff rather than pre-tariff. And I think that's a really important point. So you would expect goods, particularly those from overseas, to be different. And of course, that means that the cash flow pressures and therefore stock prices of like Apple and other large corporations like Nike, are under question. So that's the first point. The second point is there will be some dumping of potentially some products. And I wouldn't be surprised to see some dumping of Chinese products into Australia. But we've got a question about the quality. And we know the quality of building materials being shipped into Australia is pretty low at the moment anyway. And I'm seeing lots of problems with properties that were built over the last 10 years or so in Australia with foreign-made materials that are actually just degrading much quicker than people expected. And I think that's really important to understand. But I guess the other point I've got, Edwin, in all of this, the truth of the matter is that we have many households who are really under pressure. I made a show yesterday called Many Households Are Feeling the Pressure, and the election is missing the point because a lot of the discussion, the Port of Darwin or making batteries cheaper for people, they're missing the point. A lot of people are really very, very uncertain already and are under significant pressure. And by the way, if you are interested, the followers are interested in watching my show tomorrow, I'll go into this in more detail when I'm going to look at the postcode analysis to the end of March. And people can ask questions about particular postcodes. But my general point is households have a real problem already. And whilst the sort of incomes have been ticking up for some people, a lot, not so much. If you're in the rental sector, then you've got huge issues. And all of this is going to put huge amounts of pressure on people in addition to where we currently are. So this is bad news. And by the way, to my mind, it makes a lot of the election campaign, the election policies that people have been talking about completely irrelevant. So I guess the question we've got to ask ourselves is, what will Albo do? Well, what will the new government, if it's not Albo, and by the way, the latest polls show that Albo is now back in the lead again, because I would argue that Dutton's been not very effective in terms of some of his communications relatively recently. And moving around like, should government employees go back to work or not 5 days a week? I mean, you know, that's a pretty big one. There's a few other, you know, U-turns and things. So we are in a very uncomfortable state. But we can be, I think, clear about a couple of things. The first is there is still considerable demand for property in Australia from locals. And we also know that there is considerable appetite from international sources, particularly with the exchange rate, also thinking about property. So pretty much you can be sure that demand for property will rise. What will supply happen to supply? Well, we haven't seen much there at the moment. So if you think demand up, supply still limited, you'd expect to think that there will be some momentum in home prices. How much is difficult to tell, but it does seem to be a bit of a game changer in terms of the modeling. In fact, I've updated my models appropriately to try and address some of those things. And it's worth noting that the auction clearances this time around, down a bit last week, but still relatively strong. I got Easter, of course, and there was this article suggesting that in some suburban areas, you know, there is significant growth in value, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the property market is one to watch, and I think Sydney in particular will be very interesting in the next few months. And some of the assumed trajectory is probably in question now.
Yeah, look, Martin, the thing is that from the demand side of things, right? Well, look, as I said, there are three main. I mean, there's more, but there are three main things that we've got to look at. As we said earlier on, the shares, people moving the asset class to what would they consider to be a more secure asset class, and that's bricks and mortar from a rental point of view, regardless of the fact that some of the properties that are under the new construction or the high rise where they predominantly dump the money into is doesn't end up being that rewarding. But yeah, to a point, it's a little bit, they feel a little bit safer. And a lot of the self-managed super funds or the bigger super fund managers that dump money the super into that type, asset class. You've really got no choice if they're managing for you. But from a self-managed point of view, again, it's whatever people feel more comfortable with that they're going to move towards, and it's either gold or property for many. And the other thing that many people don't realize is how many buyers there still are on the sidelines, local buyers. To add to the local buyers that are still on the sideline, that are cashed up and they're just waiting to pounce, you've also got the expats that are coming back with a lot of money. Now, one of the biggest things, one of the biggest conversations that the WeChat chatterers have been discussing over the last week has been the uncertainty. And mainly the WeChat chatterers over in China, the WeChat chatter groups over there in mainland China, they're really convinced that Europe is going to be on fire. When I say Europe is going to be on fire, I mean we're talking about a hot war. And when you start thinking about the Asian expats that we have, the Chinese Asian descent that have gone abroad that have got PR, but when they start looking at whether they're sitting in England, whether they're sitting in any other part of Europe, or even other parts of Asia for that matter, we still look very safe and very appealing and cheap in comparison. So yeah, that's from the supply side of things. Look, I often think what do the majority of people do when they panic? Right? They do nothing. The majority of the people do nothing. And I feel that because we've got the election coming on, because of this hit with the tariffs, and because of winter, I think that that numbers on market for sale on market are going to start pulling back, and they'll pull back. My view is that they will pull back quite rapidly. And some parts of Sydney, even before all these tariff things and that came about, we're already seeing in and the majority of freestanding homes is like parts of the Blacktown region where you had historically over the last 4 years, you still had anywhere between 15 and 21 homes for sale in certain suburbs of Blacktown. You've only got four or five, and that's only just happened over the last couple of weeks. And anything that comes on that is priced well just gets absorbed really, really quickly. I mean, that's in the Blacktown region, and there are also many other suburbs that are similar, but. Again, there's also there's the ones that go fairly quickly are the ones that are well presented. So the other thing, Martin, is that another reason why I feel that that there's going to be less supply moving forward, and that'll dwindle away fairly quickly, is because the more the mainstream media talk about rate cuts, well, those that were thinking of selling. I'm not sure what your surveys are saying. I'm not sure whether it's too early to yet, or whether you've had any discussion with in your surveys, or it's too early to say. But I would be one to think that, hold on, if there's going to be another 25 or 50 basis points cut, post-election, well, they're going to wait it out. They're going to wait it out before they put the property on the market. And again, another encouraging point to that is, hey, again, it's winter. Let's wait till spring. Anyway, so this three-pronged attack on the listing numbers could perhaps see a lot less homes being put on the market for sale in the coming weeks, if not months.
Well, you asked about my surveys, and of course, the surveys have not come back since the Trump announcement last week yet. They'll come back later in the week. But yes, there was definitely some caution amongst people with regards to saying, well, I'm going to sit and wait. I'm going to wait for the election, see how that plays out. I'm going to see what's going to happen to interest rates, because already there was talk about rate cuts. And interestingly, of course, some property investors are starting to still look at their numbers and think, well, hang on a moment. I'm not sure I can continue this for much longer, because the cash flow from the investment is still negative. And if we're not going to see considerable rises, then, maybe I should revisit this and compare what I can get, for example, on bonds or indeed term deposits, because at the moment, 5-year term deposit rates are still quite strong. So it is quite interesting just watching this. So I think there's a lot of uncertainty there. I also would make the point that some of the first-time buyers in my surveys who are aspiring to get in are still struggling to be able to afford to get in. And the banks have been a bit more flexible with some of their lending. But nevertheless, for many people, it's quite difficult to be able to afford to get in. And then the other side of it is we've still got the renters, of course, who's still seeing rents going up. So unfortunately, the publicly available public asking rents, which suggest things are coming down, is not what's happening on the ground for people who are in the rental sector already. In fact, 77% or thereabouts of those in the rental sector on my surveys are now struggling. So they are struggling to work out what to do, and they're in this dilemma. Do they try and get something to buy, or do they actually hang in and pay more in the rental sector? So all of this speaks to uncertainty. The other interesting observation in my surveys is the upgraders. There are a bunch of people who are actually thinking about, we need a bigger property. We got some money. So they're shopping around, and they're actually quite active at the moment. So if the right property comes on in the right place and it's got a reasonable price, they're happy to pay top dollar. So I actually think the upgrading story is also one to watch too.
Look, and this is uncanny. Now, I don't have a peek. I didn't have a peek at your surveys, And you can attest to that because I'm not very good with computers and I can't hack into your system, Martin. But that was, when we spoke to some of the agents and getting some feedback as to what type of properties were coming on the market for sale and what people were doing. Over the weekend, and one of the conversations was very, very interesting, and with one particular agent in the eastern suburbs, and he said that he's got 9 to 11 new listings that he's taken on over the last 2 weeks, mostly are apartments, and out of all the of what he's got on his books, out of all the 17 listings that he has on his books currently. One of them is a townhouse, 15 are apartments, and one of them is a freestanding house. So after going through that WhatsApp messaging, then I got on the phone with him to dig a little bit deeper, and I said, "Hey, mate, tell me a little bit more as to why people are selling, why so many apartments all of a sudden in the last over the last 3 4 weeks." And by the way, today, when I was talking to him today, he said he had to go to three market appraisals, and guess what? They were all apartments. And now, having said that, I also called a couple of agents in the Northwest region, and similar stories, not as many, but similar stories. And you get the picture as to where there's a lot more high-rise developments, and as opposed to the areas and the suburbs that where agents are sort of more surrounded by freestanding homes and high-rise developments. But the uncanny thing about what your surveys have already been showing, what you just shared earlier on, and in the conversation that I had with this agent. So the number one reason, Martin, the number one reason why people were selling out of their apartments in the East, were this is number one reason. They bought to get into the market and create a relationship with the bank, and now they feel that it's time to upgrade. So the whole purpose wasn't necessarily to make money out of the property. I mean, they try to make the money by way of buying in, and then whether they got a first home buyer's grant, whether they got any other grant, or if they paid stamp duty and costs, as long as they got and they seem to be getting out, dollar for dollar in that sense. So they. Let's say cost them 800, whether it be 2 years or 3 years ago, they went in and they're still walking out after all costs with the 800. They're okay with that because the relationship that they now have with the bank has allowed them to look at upgrading, and apart from having further savings on the side and other investments that they're cashing out on. So I thought that was uncanny in relation to what your surveys are already showing, that people are buying to how many people are buying to upgrade. Now the second reason why a lot of these apartments are coming on the market were many were fearful that there was going to be a backlash, whether it be and from the whether it be the new Labor government or a Liberal government, whichever government, but there was going to be a backlash, and either party would want to pull back on student numbers. So there was going to be a bit of disruption, whether it be for 6 months, 12 months, until things settle down, and then we get back to the usual shit that they get up to. But regardless, they can't afford not to have their apartments tenanted, even the way that they've got them tenanted, by overcrowding, and they just simply can't afford it. Because obviously, then there's a third reason, that because there's more high-rise apartments available and coming to to completion in these areas in the Northwest region and in the East, competition obviously will they feel that they'll drive the market down. Not the natural market, and we aren't talking about the normal market, your standard market, but their market. So where they can charge up to $250 per bed, they now can only charge $200 per bed and the like. So it's a different. So we are talking about two different markets, right? And the fourth reason was they're starting to really feel the pinch after being in the apartments or holding the apartments for 4 or 5 years, where even at the high rental yields that they get because of the student accommodation and the way that they, the budget accommodation that they've got these apartments in, even after that, it's still costing them, at best case scenario, they're breaking even, or even costing them on top of the extra money that they're getting by cash on the side. And because the apartments have got a lot of trouble, I've got a lot of problems, they've got a lot of issues. So generally, it seems like the life expectancy of the high-rise developments that we're building, a while back, you could say that, we look at apartments that were built in the 70s and they're still standing and they're still somewhat, reasonably maintained for their age. But you look at the ones that were built in the 90s, they got their issues. But the ones that were built 2000 and beyond, their life expectancy dwindled from 10 years to now, it seems, 4 to 5 years before major issues and other encumbrances come upon the on the owners. So they're the 4 reasons. But as I said, it was very uncanny that a lot of them are looking at, the majority are looking at upgrading, in that little survey that we did over the weekend.
Very interesting. And just on the defects, this was a very interesting article titled "Shoddy Sydney." And it basically started off, "In the race to meet housing targets, taxpayers are losing millions on defects." And they quote a particular example here of somebody who bought an apartment, and every time it rained, it would become sopping wet, and they had to replace floors, skirtings, gyprock, etc., etc. Spend about $40,000 repairing cracks and putting waterproof down. Purchased in 2020 and built in 2017. So this is not an old property. This is a relatively new property. So it just goes to show even what you said about the fact that new properties are the problem. And of course, it then goes on to talk about the issue with regard to shoddy construction, Opal Towers, Mascot Towers, etc., etc. The Building Commissioner's work, which found the biggest problems across the state, maybe 20 to 40% of all apartments face problems with water ingress, and that can cost considerable amounts of money to fit, plus fire sprinklers and other things as well. Now, of course, they are finding that there is a huge pressure to build more and build quick, but the quality of what's being built is a real problem. And this damp question and this issue of bad waterproofing, I think it's so widespread, particularly in properties less than 10 years old.
Yeah, and look, for the life of me, I know it comes back to cost, but at the end of the day, there are better ways to waterproof the wet areas and to push developers and builders to take charge over the in order to control this, because that's the majority of the problems. We went and inspected an apartment for one of our clients over the weekend, and had a nice extended patio on the on one of the on the second transfer slab of the building, and you look like at great views of the of the precinct, and it was elevated, was built on a bit of a hill, so it had beautiful views, lots of sun. But Martin, that terrace area, or that call it a terrace, call it a balcony, whatever you want to call it, just that alone would cost $50,000 to rectify. Now, one of the things that, and I put the videos up on my my Twitter feed, on my Twitter handle or X handle, and for people to watch the videos. And it was fascinating because there were two apartments that were for sale when we went and inspected this this particular one, and they presented well. They're all nice and polished and shiny and staged, but it's not what you see inside your space of air that you're buying. That really counts. It's what you don't see, and where the there was just issue after issue after issue. And then when you did do a little bit more digging, then you've got a situation and a scenario where then you find out that the developer and the builder are in liquidation, and the owner's corporation is in deficit, and only God knows how they're going to be fixing all the water issues, and also the makeshift cover up of the structural issues in the two basements that would need to be ripped apart and re-looked at by structural engineers. So the list goes on. So the agent called me earlier today, and he said, "Edwin, what do you think of the apartment?" I said, "Look, it looked really nice. I liked the way you staged it. It looked really polished." He goes, "Oh, so what would you be recommending your client to do?" And I said, "Quite frankly, I'd be recommending my client to steer away from it." He goes, "Really? Why is that?" "Well, would you put a price on it if you were to buy it for your client?" I said, "No." He goes, "What do you mean?" I said, "I've told them that I wouldn't let them touch it with a 10-foot pole, because it's a money pit." And then I started obviously rattling off all the different issues and some of the other issues that were already a part of the proceedings that were also in court. And it's a money pit. Regardless of the fact that on face value was priced well, looked good, like even the outside looked okay, but it's not until you went into the basement, not until you get the not the strata reports that the strata manager give you, but the real reports and everything else that they don't want to give you, that you get your solicitor to demand to give it to you, that you find out all these issues. Yeah, so that's. But that's where the population has been pushed, Martin. We've discussed this before, and that's a sad part. And from what we're seeing, it's a given that we are going to see a so not everything is going to not every property type in different parts of Sydney is going to maintain its value. It hasn't maintained its value or even continued to rise. And this is where people have got to be extra careful with. But a lot of the young people have been forced and coerced, corralled, whatever word you want to use, to buy these shoddy buildings, because where else do they go? Especially if they want to be close to where they grew up.
Yeah, it's a real issue. And it's interesting, going back to this particular article, there were two other points I wanted to make. The first was, the article said the business consultant considers himself a savvy property purchaser and negotiated a lower price for his family's new North Ryde apartment on the basis that the strata report had no committee meetings and almost no maintenance documentation. So, you can do your due diligence, but even so, you might not miss it. And the other interesting observation was, the article talks about David Chandler, the retired building commissioner, who insisted that there was a deep denial about the quality of home construction, but his successor takes a different view. No building is built defect-free. So it's a defect, but not an irrecoverable defect. The solution is to replace the door. He's sort of an example of a doorknob that's not quite right. So they haven't actually necessarily got a common view as to how much the defects are. And I think David Chandler is closer to the situation rather than the new commissioner, which worries me that maybe New South Wales is backpedaling a bit with some of this stuff about defects.
Oh, look, they have to. They have to, Martin, because if they go down the path that Chandler was moving, that the carriageway that he was on, you could continue to add more costs to the construction. But again, in a way, we were being pushed back to your six level, in many parts, your six level, at best case scenarios. Then anything beyond that shouldn't be built around many parts of Sydney, and in the areas that they want to build these high-rise monstrosities. Areas where geographically and from a geotech point of view, the land can't handle it. the land can't handle it. It's just not, we don't have the capacity to build and the controls, to put in place to monitor whether or not things are being built. I mean, we know that, the many shortcuts that many have taken. I mean, our contacts in HIA, our contacts in the engineering industry, and in other fields of the construction industry, tell us over and over again. I mean, there's lots of stuff that we haven't shared on the show. I've shared with you personally, and we haven't shared on the show because of, we can't. And it's scary. It's scary to know that one building is, the poles are 1.5 meters short of where they should be, and the building next door had to just, turn a blind eye, and and the builders just had to continue on, and regardless, and they couldn't even report the building next to theirs, because if they reported it, well, guess what? Then both buildings have a work stop order on them until things are rectified. Nothing gets built. I mean, this is why they've got to go. They've got to go. They've got to go back. But until you start addressing all the points that we've discussed in the show, and many others have discussed on the many social media platforms, other than the mainstream media, the one to avoid it, unless you put it all in the one melting pot, you're not going to. We are not going to be firing on all eight cylinders. We're going to be, if we're trying to run a V8, we're going to be at best. We're going to be running on three and a half cylinders. And this is how the government wants to run the country. And this is why going back to what the US is doing with the tariffs and everything else, the ball is with the current government now. And let's see what they do. But unfortunately, I think they're just going to fumble the ball, and it's going to be too much of a hot potato. And the losers, unless people wising up to in the next election and start putting some real thought as to who they vote for and how they vote, it's going to be, four more years of greater pain. We are going to have another 4 years, continuously have pain, but do we really need the amount of pain if we choose, if this two nincompoops are in control, whether it's the libs or the labs, have full control.
Well, I had a wicked thought. The Trump tariff situation actually will encourage the governments to keep the migration level high, because it'll be the only lever they've got, right? Bad exchange rate, et cetera, probably lower interest rates. So maybe the story will be even higher migration, which is going to be creating a bigger demand for later. And talking about the mix of property, you've also provided us with an updated chart, which shows that the tracking price, well, it does vary quite considerably by type of property, and we continue to track this, right?
Yeah, and but the freestanding homes, they seem to be bouncing back up again in the high end. I mean, the median over the last weekend's auctions, that went back up to 1.9 for freestanding homes in the, in the Sydney region, and they seem to be bouncing back up again in the Melbourne. Apartments are just keep on floundering along, if anything, because of the sheer number, the choice that is out there. But I was interested to see how, the top end seemed to be having good results of late. It's just going to be, again, it's just going to be monitoring and seeing what happens. But on the other side of the equation, we, not much of a move with your freestanding homes below the million. I mean, when we started tracking it, we started at 1,140, and last week was 1,084, and this week we're just a few more than last week. Not much more. But when you start going through those numbers, and when you start going through the Sydney region, the portal, and you start looking at it, you can tell that there's more I've noticed over the last 2 weeks there are more listings advertised under the million that will fetch anywhere between 1.1 to 1.3 million dollars. It's just a gimmicky. So my call still is that we're tracking closer to 500, if not five to 600, a best case scenario for homes under a million in the Sydney region, which is scary, which is a scary number, and yet, the government's not talking about this. No one seems to be wanting to talk about this, and that is real housing affordability, because they say, well, there's a lot more under a million in the in the Sydney region if you start looking at apartments. But okay, you can get in for under a million, but what are the ongoing costs?
Well, it is very interesting, and just come back to politics for a second. You know, the announcement of the storage batteries subsidy is great if you can afford to buy the battery in the first place,
yes.
But it doesn't actually do anything, as far as I can see, to help with housing affordability. And what it does do is it prevents many people perhaps even thinking about buying. But other people who've got property will say, "Well, I'll go and buy this extra battery," and so. You're supporting people who are already in the market, already in the system. It's the people who can't get in, people stuck in rental accommodation who, of course, can't fit batteries because they're in the rental sector, who are really stuck. And so, again, it seems to me completely short-sighted. There's no real focus on addressing the root cause issues of housing affordability, which we've touched on many times before. So, you know, I am more and more disgusted about the quality of the of the arguments on both sides of politics, and both mainstream parties are about each other. On the numbers, just briefly, last week in Sydney, 20,654. This week, 20,455. So, you know, it's going along. And interestingly, if you compare this year with last year, your chart still shows that, well, we're tracking a little bit higher than last year. But the question is, what is the quality of the stuff being listed?
Yeah, the quality and the type of properties that are coming on. We're seeing a lot more apartments come on, and also blocks of land for sale, because the numbers in the in Domain also picked that up as well. It's more strata lots for sale, which is totally opposed to where the great Aussie dream. But it's well, as we now hit the the daylight savings over, and we're riding into winter. Let's see how the numbers track moving forward, and with the election and the uncertainty, I'm gonna put my head on the chopping block here and say that we're gonna see considerable diminishing of for sale listing numbers. Well and truly after the election.
Well, let's look at Melbourne at the moment. On the 31st, 28,098, dropping to 27,812 a week later. So a small drop. And in Brisbane on the 31st, 3,925 compared with 3,797. So the trends are beginning to show, as you'd expect, as you come into the Easter holiday period, and then into the cooler period, and of course, as you say, the election too. On the auction front, no surprise that over the Easter period, it's going to get a bit quieter.
Yeah, the interesting thing when you compare it to that, when you compare it to last year, Martin, the actual listing numbers are have gone are starting to become get higher than last year's numbers. That is going to, is it people wanting to get out, more confidence in, price points. But I think when you look at the mix, again, it'll go back to the fact that there's a lot of apartment sellers wanting to get out, and the majority of those listings that have come up that have sort of been bolstering the auction numbers in the Sydney region are made up of. Strata lots or apartments, and people wanting to get out quickly.
Yeah, and a lot of them ex-investment properties. I'm certainly seeing that in the Melbourne area, and now in Sydney to an extent too. Beginning to see it in Brisbane as well. So that'll be an interesting trend to watch. On the rental sector, it is just we're looking at the latest numbers. So on the 31st in the Sydney region, 10,183, 10,244 the following week, so a small rise. In Melbourne on the 31st, 10,594 compared with 10,806, so again, a small rise, which at this time of year is not totally unsurprising. The new academic year is now well and truly over, and so demand from students has sort of settled down a little bit. But what I am seeing, just to re-underline what I said earlier on, a lot of people in the rental sector who are sitting in rental properties at the moment are still being confronted with very high demands for a rental increase. And what I don't quite get is these sort of publicly available statistics from, the big agencies that look at advertised rents are missing this trend. And it's probably simply because if you think about it, the total rental pool, there's a relatively small proportion that's actually out on the open market. And so what's happening on the open market isn't necessarily reflective of what's happening in the closed market, in the quiet market, where people are already in a property and they're being confronted with a significant demand, in some cases, 10% or more. So this is part of the unaffordability story, which is not being adequately reported in the mainstream. Although there was an ABC article, whether you saw it, where they actually showed some of the distribution comparing 4 years ago with now. I covered it in my show yesterday. And it's interesting how much of the major markets are now unaffordable.
Yeah, and people don't want to move. Like you said, people don't want to move because children at school, high schools, convenience to work, it's costly to move. And how far do you go to find some the similar property? And when you're going to a new rental, the majority of the time you only get a 6 month lease to start with. So you've got no choice but to take up that 6 month lease, which is leaves you back to. So when you start thinking of all those issues, when you start thinking of all those problematic circumstances, you just bite your tongue, grit your teeth, and you just look in the little pockets of your wallet and fork out the extra that the property manager wants, right?
Well, what
Crazy.
you do is you actually cut back on other things. It's cutting back on food, cutting back on medical expenditure, a whole range of things. And by the way, again, just to re-emphasize, tomorrow I'll be looking at the postcode analysis and where households are hurting. So come and join me on my live show and we'll look at some specific postcode. I had a big list of postcodes that people asked me to look at. So we'll try and get through as many of those as we can in the time we've got. And interestingly, Edwin, you're right. The hour change has made my life a little easier because now I don't, I'm not quite so far away. I'm only 9 hours rather than 11 hours. So it makes life a little easier for me when I come onto these shows. Now, as we come to the end of the show, you've got quite an important message here and also an opportunity.
Yeah, look, we're I guess the one of the things that I brought up on X again was the discussion about BYDs, as some of our followers call them, burn your dreams, and it stuck because of the simple fact that the issues that a lot of these the BYD vehicles have, that the dusty. In the groups that she belongs to, able to show, but then unfortunately those reports get taken down fairly quickly. But BYD is becoming a big fad in Australia, and if you look at the my ex post, I made a comment about that. But the my ex post itself is in the interesting part. The interesting point. Or comment thereafter, after I put my point on, was made by boss there on boss B13, where in his response to my post, and it was in relation to something that caught my attention. It says Fire and Rescue New South Wales response to 384 lithium ion battery incidents. In New South Wales, which is something that we raised last year, we were talking about, and we were asking the question, how long is it going to be before we start hearing more and more issues with regards to the lithium batteries? And obviously with your electric bikes, your rental accommodation where you've got a lot of students that do Uber Eats or whatever, delivery workers, the delivery couriers, and the like, charging. But more importantly, it was also to do with how people are discarding with these used lithium-ion batteries, and even they're just putting them in the bin and dumping them, and next thing you know, they combust, self-combust in the rubbish, in the re recycling plants. So there's a whole new, what would you say? There's a whole new paradigm. There's a whole new conversation. There's a whole new topic around the, what happens with when the batteries are no longer of use. I mean, the old car batteries, if you recall, Martin, we used to, take the acid out, wash them out, and then turn the lead inside the batteries. We used to melt that down when we were teenagers, and use melt them down and use them as the melted lead. We turn them into sinkers or anything else that we could think of. The majority of them went in, were turned into sinkers, because we kept on losing sinkers, and we couldn't afford, as kids, we couldn't afford to buy too many sinkers, especially when you want to catch the when you want to go rock fishing. But now people are just dumping them in normal garbage bins or keeping them around the house. So it's created another major problem around households, and the disposing of the batteries, and then you start sort of move forward, and with them, we like again the WeChat chatterers early last year said that we were going to become the dumping ground of Chinese EV vehicles, and what happens after the life expectancy of when the batteries become faulty, and they get taken out, where do they get put? Where are they going to get stored? Where is it all going to go?
Very important question. Of course, as a person here who uses quite a few cameras, and I have a number of rechargeable batteries that run with the cameras, something I've been very conscious of over the years, and actually taking responsibility for the adequate disposal of those batteries as they ultimately end up being end of life, is actually a big cost. And it's not one that's factored into the costs of when you buy gear. Or I suppose other things too. So people will be tempted to just leave them hanging around, and they can become a real problem. If you start seeing them swelling, for example, that's a really bad sign. And in fact, it's quite often the case that you don't know you've got a problem until you suddenly realize that the battery is swollen beyond the size of the thing that it was inside. And then you see the thing cracking and you think, oh, must do something about that. So it's really important to take the right measures and not don't just chuck it in the bin and hope it'll be right, because of course you're putting the risk on somebody else potentially. But I suppose it brings a more broad question about how much do we know about the health of our property, and is a property a fit and proper place to be inside? So maybe there's an interesting opportunity there.
Look, Martin, and I appreciate the time that you've given me to put this out. I've been talking to a number of tradespeople over the years, and more so over the last 6 months, because of the different subjects and different tips that we've been bringing out. And I've asked a collective group of licensed, reputable tradespeople in Sydney to work with me and extend a what we're calling a home health check service. So if I may share the phone number, or you may share the phone number with the followers, if they call this number, we will go out and do a health check of health check of the electrical, the main board, the wiring around the house, and other areas of the house that people don't normally would do themselves, or they would think it's too costly. Look, it's something that I'm pulling a lot of favors from a lot of tradespeople that I know, and as long as I work with them, they're happy to to extend this offer to our followers. But you've got to be Sydney based, Sydney region based, because that's where most of the tradespeople that I know are based, and they're happy to give a health check, comprehensive health check for the property. It'll be a so it's in my view it's a small investment. It just basically covers well, it doesn't even cover the main costs of the individuals, but covers just general costs. And this is something that if the yeah if you ring that number from tomorrow from 9 a.m. It'll be active, and we'll take your calls, and then we'll book you in and give you a health check.
Yeah, and just to say for those listening on audio, it's 0425 828 975. That's 0425 828 975. And Eben, I must say, I think this is a very, very good initiative. The number of times that I've had conversations with people as I went through my surveying career, and there were obvious dangers in the property, things like exposed wires or things like water actually in the wrong place. I mean, there are so many simple, straightforward things. And I tell you one that I really discovered quite often. These initiatives to stop rainwater going into the sewerage system. Well, it's created a whole new issue with regard to what's called soakaways. And one of the things that I've noticed recently, through various things, is some of these soakaways are not handling the higher levels of water that people are now finding on their roofs, which means you then end up with flooding in places you didn't expect to see it. So I think there's an interesting observation here about the need to look at your soakaways as well as the ones that go into the drains.
Yeah, look, some of these downpipes, I've seen downpipes that are actually being positioned underneath homes, and they've been the old galvanized downpipes. And then as we start digging and see where the bloody things are going, thinking that they're going to the side of the house, and around the sides of the house, in actual fact, they've been taken under the house. And is it any wonder in a lot of the cases, the under the house is so bloody moldy and damp, because these old galvanized downpipes and the old stuff that they used to use, and even if they plumbed it into the old terracotta, with movement, with roots and everything, it just creates more issues than what's worth. Yeah, so it's just look, it's a simple health check. Again, it's just to help our followers and our viewers, and let's see where it goes, and hopefully we can continue to look after our followers.
Yeah, well, Edwin, thank you very much for your show tonight. And I think this is a really good initiative, too. I look forward to catching up with you next week. It will feel like a big week, I think, this week. So it'll be interesting to see where things are this time next week. And of course, with the election running as well. So I look forward to catching up with you again. Meantime, stay safe and don't keep looking at stock markets because, folks, stock markets go down, stock markets go up. Property is forever.
Thank you. Did you get a job with Domain or Real Estate, Martin? Did
Maybe I should knock on their door. Take care.
you take care of yourself. All the best.